The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
He is currently the head football coach of the University of Michigan Wolverines and a former player. His dad and brother are also former players and coaches, but there is more to them than just football. It's time to talk about attacking life each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. This is Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast with Jim Harbaugh.
Back for another episode of Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, and they keep going. They just keep coming, Jack. I don't know what more to say. We're going to be joined later on in the episode by Trent Murphy and by Coach Harbaugh. Trent Murphy, NFLer, played for a coach at Stanford and was in the area, so we were lucky enough to grab him and get him on the show. And got me thinking, you know, Ohio and Michigan are such great states. You've got such fond memories, and Coach ended up going down and speaking to a group down in Dayton. Just, you know, what was your experience like in Ohio, your time in Xenia and Crestfield and everything? What are the fond memories of the high school times there for you?
Well, for me, it was exciting. Started out in coaching Canton, Ohio, Canton McKinley Elementary, physical education teacher, junior high school football, basketball, and track coach. In Perrysburg, Ohio for 2 years, right outside of Toledo, where John and Jim were both born, in the Toledo hospitals there. And then I got my first coaching job, Eaton, Ohio. They hadn't won a game in 3 years. Dave McLean was the defensive line coach at Miami, which is about 20 minutes, Oxford, Ohio, Miami University, about 20 minutes from Eaton. Told me about this opening and as a head high school coach. So I called, and superintendent was so gracious. Come on down on Saturday. We'll have an interview. And I went down and interviewed for the entire day and met some of the players and some of the coaches that were on the staff there. And he told me he'd give me a call back if I were the one that he chose to be the head coach. So I waited about 3 weeks and hadn't heard anything and thought maybe I'd give him a call. And he said he was still in the process. And I asked him about my competition, and he told me that I was the only one that had been interviewed. he couldn't quite pull the plug, I guess. And so after another week, he decided that no one was going to apply, got the job. And we were there for 2 years. And I think Jim was a year old and John was 2 years and a half. And we moved our family down there. Great experience. First year, we won 5 games, and you'd think we had won the national champion. I mean, they had a parade. I mean, they were so excited. After 2 years, we moved across town, across Dayton to Xenia, Ohio. There for a year, coached one of the very finest players that I've coached, a youngster by the name of Doug Adams, linebacker, offensive tackle, weighed about 252 pounds for us, great, great athlete, recruited to go to Ohio State University and recruited to go to the University of Michigan, came to Michigan and decided he wanted to go to Michigan. And so he called Woody to tell him that he was going to the University of Michigan, and Woody was having none of that. So he called me. Coach Hart, he didn't know me from a sack of sour apples, but Coach, I understand your youngster's going to University of Michigan. Do you think you might drive him up to Columbus, which is about an hour and a half, 2 hours away? Come up and visit with me for one of these evenings, and maybe I could talk to him about the advantages of coming to the Ohio State University. So I did. I drove him up, went to the High Line there in Columbus, Ohio. And in those days, we had a nice meal. And so he excused himself and Doug and came back an hour later and decided he changed his mind.
Wow.
But you aren't around Woody for very long before you don't change your mind, because he's very, very, very persuasive. But went to Ohio State University and played on the great teams of the late 60s. He was a starting inside linebacker. And in fact, he was on the team in 1969 that came into Ann Arbor and Bo's first year here at the University of Michigan. And, of course, Michigan had that great, great upset. But Doug was on that team, went on to play with the Cincinnati Bengals, a dentist. And then we tragically lost him in a bicycle accident where he was out riding bicycle with one of his teammates at Xenia and was struck by a car, and we lost him. But some great, great memories of our 2 years in the Dayton area and around in the state of Ohio.
What about the time at Pioneer High with John Harbaugh and your time here in the greater Ann Arbor community. Pioneer, just literally kitty corner, diagonal across the street from Michigan Stadium. Fond memories of that place, too, I take it?
I think the one Jackie would talk about, and she brings this, anytime you say Pioneer, she tells this story. John, in his senior year at Pioneer, hurt his knee in a scrimmage. Wasn't the cruciate, it was a cartilage that he tore. And Dr. Jerry O'Connor, who did all the surgical work here at the University of Michigan, operated, and he got back. They cleared it up, and he came back for like the last two or three games of the season. And Jim was a sophomore quarterback, was on the JV team for the first half of the season. Then they brought him up to be the quarterback at Pioneer. So John was the tight end and defensive back on the team, and Jim was the starting quarterback as a sophomore, playing Huron High School here and at Pioneer, and it was a cold night, and about the middle of the first quarter, Jim threw a pass to John, and he caught the ball, and down the field he goes, and the public address. The pass was thrown by Jim Harbaugh to John Harbaugh, and for some reason, Jackie got the biggest kick out of that. Her dad was Joe Sapiti, was there in the game as well, and very few times if they mention Pioneer High School that story doesn't come up.
That's a good one. I like that. So you are one of the few people probably to have some real, firsthand primal knowledge of Ohio and Michigan, and then also Woody and Bo. So how does that rivalry come to be? How does it exist as it is now? And, I mean, what are your impressions on it, I guess?
An interesting thing happened in 1978, I believe it was. We were in the Rose Bowl. We were playing in the Rose Bowl, and we went to the Big Ten party. Every year at the Rose Bowl, the Big Ten Conference put on this giant party. Bob Hope was the host at one time, and remember a comedian by the name of Red Buttons performed. I mean, it was a big, big event. So we went to that on a Friday night, I believe it was, and we got back to the hotel, and there was kind of a buzz. Something had happened in the Gator Bowl game that was played that night, and didn't realize really what had happened. Went to bed that night, got up the next morning for a meeting in the ballroom at the hotel. We had a big old desk down there with coaches could sit around the table, and we walked into the meeting at 8 o'clock in the morning, which was of course 11 o'clock here on the East Coast, and Bo was sitting at the head of the table all by himself, sobbing. I mean, tears just running down his face and his hands, crying. And Bo, what happened? They got him. They got the old man. Fired Woody, the Clemson and the Charlie Bauman and the hit that Woody put on him, and he was just sobbing and realized two things. Number one, that the bond that these two coaches had for each other. You know, having Bo was a college football player when Woody was the head coach at Miami of Ohio, and then he was a graduate assistant for Woody. And then he came back as the offensive line coach and for Ohio State University. And these two guys had a special, special bond. But the other thing that, to your question, to your thought, is Bo realized at that moment that for him, he had lost an adversary. He had lost one of the reasons that game meant so much to him, playing against his former coach and playing against the man that taught him so much about football. That was gone. And he understood that. And he was right. For a lot of people, it was the Bo and Woody, the 10-year war, and the two guys on the sideline, these two great warriors competing against each other, which in my judgment made the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry what it is today. But Bo realized in that moment, he didn't die. He just wasn't going to coach Ohio State anymore. And for him, that was
a death of sorts. A part of him died.
That's a great, right? It was a death of sorts for him. So that's what that whole thing meant to me. And then next year, Earl Bruce was the coach, and it was Ohio State, Michigan, but it wasn't the same thing. It didn't have this guy in these short sleeve shirt and that hat pulled down over his eyes on one side and Bo on the other side.
Well, and you talk about the competitors and the competition and how fierce it is. And so obviously, you know, your son, Coach Jim, has been in it as a player and as a coach, shoot, even as a ball boy on the sidelines when you were here previously. And wanted to talk a little bit about his time at Stanford, because that's really where he grew into maybe national acclaim for, you know, what he did as a coach there. And you coached briefly on the staff for the Sun Bowl game there, and Toby Gerhart, you know, almost won a Heisman Trophy, maybe perhaps thanks to you, maybe, maybe not, depends who you ask. But
Willie Taggart would take some he coached him for like 2 years, and then he took the head coaching job at Western Kentucky University, and Jim asked me to come back and just coach for the Sun Bowl. So to give me any kind of credit whatsoever would be demeaning to Willie, I'm afraid.
And we don't want to do that. But I mentioned all that to say that we're bringing Trent Murphy on the show. What are your memories like of being at Stanford, being around those guys, those men of character, and the experience overall?
It was an amazing experience. So many experiences in football. But when Jim got the job there, they had won one game the year before. They were 1-11, and it was a team that had kind of lost their way in some ways. And, you know, Stanford, maybe this isn't a football school. Maybe football isn't for us. We have other things, the academics and all those other things that maybe we should concentrate on that and not give football too much credit. But it turned around. It wasn't a dramatic turn. They won 3 or 4 games, did upset Southern Cal in that famous 41 underdog game
at the Coliseum, yeah.
That great game. So they won that big game, but then it just came around, and of course Andrew Luck was a big part of that. And they won the Orange Bowl and was ranked in the top 5 of the country, I believe it was. And all at once, Stanford realized that you can have it both. You could have the whole pie. You didn't have to decide which part of the pie you wanted. You could have it all. Academics, you could have athletics. You could put together, you know, youngsters like Trent and Andrew and some of those guys. And the beautiful thing about it is it has sustained itself. It still is of what Jim, in my judgment, developed and convinced Stanford University that they could be. And I know he takes great pleasure out of that, as he should.
There's a movie that's being produced called Nerd Nation, and they had about 30 people interviewed, and they're getting Coach Jim here this upcoming week, and it's going to talk about the rise to football powerhouseness, or for lack of a better term, just, you know, putting them on the map as a football power here in the 21st century.
Great story. When I was coaching there, I coached at Stanford in 1980 and 81. And I remember one year we went down to play Southern Cal in Los Angeles. And John Robinson was the head coach. Marcus Allen was the running back. And Jack Del Rio was a bone-crunching linebacker for the Trojans. And we went down there and got hammered pretty good. And after the game was over, I remember walking in the locker room, and our players, Stanford players, would go, "Well, yeah. For these last 3.5 hours, yeah, we got our butts kicked. But I want you to know something. Someday they'll be coming knocking on our door trying to get a job, because we'll be the president. We'll be running companies, and these guys are going to try to convince us that they can work in our company." And I said, "You know, you might be right. 4 or 5 years down the road, they may be knocking on your door. But I will agree with you. Today, they kicked your ass."
That's right. That is always the defense of the loser, right? To quote John Falk, he says, you know, the winners count their cash and the losers say deal the cards. So,
but the beautiful thing in that at 4 years at Stanford, what happened was not only 4 years down the road were they hiring many of those people, but in that 3.5-4 hours that they played against those people, they were in charge of that event as well.
There you go. Well, we'll get Trent's take on it. He's a little less outwardly cerebral. He's a behemoth of a man, but certainly smart individual. And we're looking forward to having him on with Coach Jim coming up next here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
Hey, it's Rob Riggle
and Sarah Tiana,
and you are listening to Riggle's Picks.
Yeah, and a ham horn, and we have a new podcast available on Apple Podcasts, podcast1.com, and the Podcast One app. If you love the show, share it with a friend and leave us a rating and review.
Every Thursday, we're going to sit around and we're going to talk about the things that really excite us, like life, comedy, sports, a lot of sports.
Ourselves.
A lot of Sarah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Kim Jong-un.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's going to be a lot of fun. I hope you join us.
We've got a new advertiser to the show, Hims. You can go to their website, forhims.com, F-O-R-H-I-M-S.com. And they're addressing a problem. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. I don't know if any of it. Well, Jack's gesturing that perhaps he's lost some of his hair. I know I've got a mean receding hairline. Oh, Jack wants some information. Okay, well, you can go to forhims.com, and they think that it's easier to keep the hair that you have than to try and regrow hair. So I know it's a little bit too late for you, Jack, but definitely want people to have a resource, and forhims.com is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, overall wellness for men, and these are medical-grade solutions from real licensed doctors, and they are offering well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. So order now. Listeners get a trial month of everything you need to keep your hair for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. You can see the website for full details. And this would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. So go to forhims.com/attack, A-T-T-A-C-K, like attack each day, our podcast. And that's forhims.com, F-O-R-H-I-M-S.com/attack. You can go there. You can get this great, outstanding deal, this discount, this ability to keep your hair. You can look into some of their skincare and overall wellness products. It's an outstanding line of products. It's a clean website. It's great, Jack. All I can do is advocate for it. I look forward to trying some of the gummies and everything like that, and maybe keeping some of my hair. I know I've got more than you do, and it's not a competition, but I'm looking forward to it. Again, that's forhims.com.
Now back to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
All right, back on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, and here with NFLer and former Stanford Cardinal, outstanding defensive end linebacker, Trent Murphy. Trent, welcome.
Appreciate it. Appreciate you having me here.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got...
Great to see you, Trent.
Always a pleasure, Coach.
It is always a pleasure. Before we get started, though, give us the rundown on the entire family from the great Jerry Murphy right on down.
There's a lot of us. There's seven of us. Connor, little brother, five sisters. Dad led the way.
Connor playing at USC. Just finished his freshman year.
But, yeah, I mean, starting from the top down, my dad couldn't speak enough really about him, highly how he kind of instilled work ethic into all of us, raised us. My mom on the other side, just sweet as can be.
Yep.
Came from that perspective. And then
I don't think there's ever been a dad who's instilled more in their kids than Jerry Murphy.
Oh, there's no question. There is no question. I always tell the story when he –
Trainer, motivator.
Yeah. I always tell the story when he made me do yard work, and he called it the inspection. We had 2 acres, 4 dogs, 6 horses, orange trees, filled up 2 big black trash cans, and he came out and dumped the trash cans all over the yard again and said, do it again. That was a horseshit job. I just looked at him like, you just dumped out these 2 trash cans after I just picked up the whole yard, but didn't know it at the time, but he was teaching me to do things right the first time. So, I mean, valuable lesson there as well.
I'll never forget there were so many memories of my home visit when I came to watch you play. You were playing the state championship game, and it was a big game of some kind. I think it was a state championship game. Your mom was pregnant. She went to the hospital right after the game. And then when we got back to the house, Jerry was at the hospital too, and it was me and all the kids at the time, and a cow hanging from the tree. Coach, come out here, look at the cow hanging on the tree. They were you had cut it; it was bleeding. It was like you were bleeding it out or something. Was it a cow or a deer? Or what was it?
It was some kind of animal. Yeah, it was our butcher cow that we named Barbecue. Which I guess wasn't socially acceptable. But, yeah, we had just cut it and gutted it and had it hanging up, waiting for the butcher to take it. Figured what better than to raise our own cattle to have a deep freezer full of meat.
I don't quite know what the level above alpha male is, but it sounds like that's what Jerry Murphy is. Like the alpha male of alpha males.
Yeah, he's the biggest, strongest male in the family. And one of the strongest human beings I've ever met.
For reference here, Trent, what's your dimensions?
6'5 and 3/4 is about 255, 260.
And you mean to tell me that your dad takes up more of a door frame than that?
I'm the runt. Easily.
Wow.
And how many Division One athletes out of the family?
Three right now. Could have been four.
Sister then, played basketball at ASU.
Then played professionally in Germany for a year. Connor's at SC. I went to Stanford. Natalie could have played volleyball at D3. And then Maddie May is about to be the best out of
all
of us.
She'll be the best of them all, I'm sure. I remember, and then Jerry came on Trent's official visit, and Trent had committed to Stanford. Jerry was talking to me about the weight program, and there's some changes we made to the weight program based on Jerry's suggestions. And I remember making the comment, yes, sir, we will make those changes, because he kind of had me up against the wall.
And like physically?
Well, I mean, he did grab me and throw me up against the wall.
But you were kind of cornered.
Cornered up against the wall.
Spiritually against the wall.
Okay.
Spiritually, I was up against the wall. I just want to say one thing right now, Mr. Murphy. And if I ever do anything that offends you, please let me know, because that will not be my intent ever to offend you in any way.
And only appropriate to mention now that Jerry Murphy was almost the entire inspiration for the new performance center that we're putting together. There is a room which could be called the Jerry Murphy room.
Yeah, it's really dedicated to the way Jerry Murphy trained his kids. Old school, country strong. There's weights, but they're also Jerry would take water heaters and put handles on them, and he and the kids would carry them back and forth. I mean, the spirit of baling hay, the spirit of taking big rocks and putting them up onto a truck. I mean, all that. If you go to the Murphy home, that's what the backyard is dedicated to. It's fitness and training. Old school, you can describe it better. And the garage, there's weights and machines and pictures of Schwarzenegger and power lifters. Yeah. I mean, it's dedicated to training.
Yeah, I mean, it's full methodology that comes from the blue-collar mentality. He's a construction worker, grew up, and it's hard to replicate what a lifetime of physical labor will do for your hands, your core strength, make you strong, harden you, make you tough. And that was kind of his philosophy, is you're going to swing a hammer, you're going to hit a tire, flip a tire, drag a tire, drag a sled, lift water heaters over your head, and just building that kind of physical preparedness is hard to replicate. And, I mean, having that in the core and being raised that way puts you ready for almost anything life will throw at you.
Yeah.
The combination of that skill set and the demands on the body with our new strength staff has now resulted in the invitation to – it'll be the Tim Wadhams Black Room, I think, is what we're calling it. But it's effectively the Jerry Murphy Room. It's invitation only. And the reward for doing great work and being the hardest worker is more work.
Well, and then once you came inside the Murphy home, I mean, it was kick off your shoes, sit there in a comfortable chair. Everybody there talking. Everybody there connecting. Everybody there. They're happy, just a tremendous, plenty of cold milk. In the refrigerator. I mean, it's just.
Is it heaven on earth? It sounds like best home visit ever.
Well.
Up there.
No doubt. I mean, there's, I got, had a chance to recruit Connor too. And then other times, if I'm in the Phoenix area, then, it's a real treat to stop by the Murphy's house and. They welcome you. You're part of the family, and can't at the top of families that coached or recruited or in any category, the Murphys are right there easily in the top five.
Trent and I were thinking back to the defensive line in 2010 when he was there with so many great names: Chase Thomas and Sione Fua. And Henry Anderson and David Perry. Trent, talk a little bit about your experience as part of one of the best defensive lines.
Henry Anderson?
Yeah, everyone.
Yeah, I mean, my class alone was Josh Morrow, Ben Gardner.
Shoot.
We were both recruited as three
DNs. Adolphius?
Yeah, and it was like I went to these holes got these three tough guys, and I want to see who's the toughest. So we kind of came in with a chip on our shoulder competing, but also best friends. And
ended up all in the NFL.
Yeah, everyone playing in the NFL, and I think that, that atmosphere created just this tough, hard-nosed front seven. And talking to guys that played at ASU or guys we played against, I mean, that's been the most fun, is to hear after the fact how intimidated they were to play our front seven. They said, there's nothing we could do. Even if we got a first down, all excited, we looked up and you guys were lined up, salivating, ready to go again. You did not care that we just gained 20 yards. Yeah. You were going to hit us in the mouth again. There was nothing we could do to dishearten or break you guys up. And so, I mean, it was a special time, special years, and to play with that group of guys is, I mean, hard to replicate. It was a lot of fun.
And you know, you could make the argument who made who better, but iron sharpening iron. You had that defensive line, and you had then on the other side, you know, there's DeCastro,
Cameron Fleming,
and Martin,
Chase Beeler, All American, and Andy Phillips.
Basically, had two NFL teams playing against each other. Every
Hall,
day.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, all those guys ended up playing pro ball themselves.
Every tight end, every running back, both fullbacks.
Let's go into the tight ends. You know, the great Zach Ertz.
Oh,
you know.
Good night.
Toilolo and Kobe Fleener and Jim Dre. And Ryan Eric Lorig and
yeah.
Hewitt, and it was an amazing thing. Could you put your finger on one thing? I mean, just not only all the great players, but the team too. I mean, you go to a wedding now. If one of the guys gets married, and there's 30, 40 guys,
yeah.
You know, that go to each of the weddings. It's it's unbelievable, the connection.
Yeah, there's a huge connection. I think just something about getting thrown through the fire every day, fighting adversity, whether it's self-inflicted adversity from the coaches or from leaders on the team or anything like that, just it kind of hardens you and you grow together as a unit. And I think, I mean, nobody can take that away from us. We, you know, those 6 a.m.s, all those conditioning, running all those gashes before we got on a play to go to the Orange Bowl.
Self-inflicted adversity by the coaches. Explain that. What is that? You have self-inflicted adversity. I understand that. You had self-inflicted adversity.
Yeah, I mean.
But then it was brought up by the coach.
All the adversity, exactly.
Okay.
I mean, we just prepared ourselves that no matter what happened, whatever the refs threw at us, the weather, anything that was outside of our control, we threw so much adversity at ourselves that there's nothing we could do but smile, come together, and then hit it head on. And I think just that kind of having that character and that mentality, I mean, that's what you want from a defensive unit, at least from that perspective.
Yeah.
Offense throws a pick, offense gets a touchdown. Who cares? We got to go back out there and hit somebody in the mouth. And that's what we were doing.
Just for some framework about how that mentality translates onto the field, Trent had 9.5 sacks in 2016 in the NFC East, which might have some of the best offensive lines certainly in the NFL. What's it like going against, guys from the Eagles who are now Super Bowl champions, Tyron Smith and the Dallas Cowboys? What was that experience like for you succeeding at such a high level?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically just a new challenge to find a solution to and continue to outwork your opponents, and it's a little puzzle piece. I mean, you're going to find a way to beat them. They work hard. They're very talented players, but at the end of the day, they're human. And then you can beat them and get to the quarterback and be disruptive, and that's what I get paid to do. So that's kind of what I take pride in doing out there. But a lot of talented line, and so it takes a lot of hard work and focus to get the job done. But I've enjoyed it.
I love that new challenge to find a solution to. You're up here with Westside Barbell, you know, helping out in our performance center and just eager to get better. I mean, 2017, you tore your ACL. I have reason to think that you're going to be back and better than ever next year. What's that process been like for you coming back from ACL, getting prepared for the 2018 season?
Yeah, I mean, I've enjoyed it because I think a lot of people expect coming off a knee injury, like, oh, how's he going to do what he did before? And that's not really the perspective I'm looking at. I'm looking at it, not only will I be able to bend the edge like I could before, but I'm going to be even more powerful doing it. Mm-hmm. And that's why I went to a place like a historic place like Westside that just kind of produces freaks. That's why you guys are putting their strength equipment in your weight room, because it just builds that base that you need to draw from. And so I'm pretty excited to just rebuild myself from the ground up and come back even better than I was before.
Bigger, faster, stronger coming back from an injury. I was glad JT brought it up because Trent talking about adversity and always been a guy that takes it head on. That's the way he was raised. That's the kind of man he is. But, I mean, he's in his shorts right now, and you see the knee right there with, you know, what is that, three different scars, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, two big ones and it looks like a little scope as well. How many surgeries have you had?
They just knocked it all out in one trip. They like to do the ACL and MCL different times, but we just did it at the same time and had a quick, strong recovery from that perspective. But they said I'm past ahead of all measures of the normal realms. I was actually going to try to come back and play last season if we made the playoffs, which is medically not supposed to happen. But I think I could have been able to do it. But I've enjoyed it. The Lord graced me with a spare knee.
Yeah. And you got a smart girlfriend who's attending medical school here at the University of Michigan. She was, I recall she was a Stanford gymnast.
Yeah, All-American gymnast at Stanford, then did a post-bac program, and now doing med school at Michigan and doing really well for herself and respected amongst her peers. So she's doing big things here at Michigan, so it's cool to have that excuse to get back here and connect with kind of all my old Stanford peeps as well.
You got your picture on the wall there. You see that, and Trent also gave a jersey the last time he was here. I really appreciated that, and you signed it, and he has. This is probably about the third or fourth time you've come up and said hello. So we appreciate seeing you.
I guess the last thing, are we ever going to be graced in some sort of mass form by Jerry Murphy's wisdom? I mean, a book, a Twitter account. It's like the Chuck Norrisisms, right? If Jerry Murphy has $1 and you have $1, Jerry Murphy has more money than you.
Yeah,
you know, right? I mean, I'm like,
no question. This rattlesnake bit him a couple years ago, and after 2 days of excruciating pain, the rattlesnake died. So.
That's right.
I haven't heard that. That's a true story?
No. The Chuck Norrisisms, right? Oh. You know?
He'll definitely probably come out with a book or philosophy, and I kick myself every time because as a son, I got to be stubborn and put up a fight at first, and then about 8 years later, I do something, and then he reminds me of an email or something he sent where he told me to do that about 5 to 8 years ago, and I'm like, shoot. He's just literally right every time. But he reads and researches more than anybody, so – I'm sure he'll come out with some kind of writing or philosophy. And
future guest. We should have had him on the phone right now.
I know. I mean, father-son element. We got a couple good father-son duos. But we have had people back. So maybe after you win the Super Bowl or Pro Bowl or whatever next year, we can have you back on and get Jerry on. And I don't know. That could be fun.
He loves it. My dad's probably the biggest Harbaugh fan out there. So he'd be out here in a heartbeat for sure.
I love it. That's great. Coach, any closing thoughts for Trent?
Oh, just we love you, and keep up the great work. You're one of the all-time greats, and great seeing you. Appreciate you coming by. Yeah.
I appreciate it, Coach. I'll be rooting for you guys this season, as always.
Thanks for coming on with us, Trent. Before we get to Jack Talk, we want to talk about a true and loyal supporter of the program. That, of course, is True Car. Again, back to the useful car tips that you're not aware of. A coffee filter and a little bit of olive oil can clean your interior. Removing excess weight from your car will improve your gas mileage. And then we talked about the key fob to the chin or facial parts to help extend the range. That is very awkward and quirky, but a true fact. Here's another tip you might also not know. True Car helps people get used cars, not just new cars. That's right. True Car isn't just for buying new cars. With their certified dealer network and their nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you will enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler car buying experience, whether you buy new or used. So with True Car, you can see what other people have paid for the vehicles that you are looking for in your area, so you know you're getting a good deal before you buy. Also, you're more likely to enjoy a faster car buying experience by connecting with True Car certified dealers. When you're ready to buy a new or used car, check out True Car and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states, but you can get outstanding deals, I assume, in Alaska, Hawaii, Vermont, North Carolina, Washington, Michigan, Carolina. I already said Carolina. But South Carolina, I don't know. All 50 states. True Car for your next used or new car. All right, now back for everybody's favorite segment on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. And this is hashtag Jack Talk. And Jack, I think that there is there's not enough appreciation out there for high school coaches and the molding that they do of young men and players and the values that they teach. And you were the one who brought it to my attention, and you wrote some great words about it. And I thought that this would be a great platform for you to share that with, because we know we've got a lot of coaches that listen, and kind of give them a little attaboy to let them know that we appreciate what they're doing here at the collegiate level, and I'm sure in households around America.
I have a tremendous respect for junior high school coaches and high school coaches. I think we, in our lives, my life, growing up in Crestline, we had a guy, Coach Hudson. Can't even tell you what his first name was. It was Coach Hudson. I knew him from the time we could walk. He ran the recreational programs in our town. He was the football coach. He was the basketball coach. He was the track coach. He was the driver's education. He was assistant principal for discipline. I mean, he did it all. And I thought to myself at some point, this is somebody that I want to be like. I want to be a coach. And he introduced me to this profession. But everyone, I bet you have someone in your life, a coach, at some point in elementary school or junior high school or high school coach, you looked up and that's a man. And that's who I want to be like. Well, our coaches today are in that same position, maybe in a more of a position now than ever before, because there's a lot of youngsters that grow and don't see a father figure until they maybe get into junior high school and get involved with athletics and teachers and those types of things. And there's mothers out there, single mothers, that this is the last hope maybe for her son, that she can introduce him to a coach or a teacher or a pastor or somebody that can show that youngster what it's like to be a man, and football is the avenue to do that. But the introduction to those coaches that carry that great responsibility.
And really, if you look at it, I mean, the financial benefit for high school coaches is next to nothing. I mean, there are unpaid assistants. There are assistants that hardly make anything. I mean, they do it for the love of the game, to perpetuate the sport, and really to try and have a profound impact on the youth that they coach on a daily basis.
I can't think of the gentleman's name, the coach this past week down in Florida.
Aaron Fain.
I mean, here's a coach, you know, and he was in those situations. I could only imagine, you know, somebody coming in with a assault rifle and you're there. But it does not surprise me. There was a football coach and an athletics director or somebody that been around these young people, that just bang, that happened, and bang, they step in front and protect those students. It's just, again, another tribute to the outstanding men coaching football and the outstanding women that are coaching other sports, women's sports.
And if you are comfortable enough with trusting America's youth to teachers, you'll find that so many of these football coaches are teachers in the classroom, but then also in football and in life. And so you get the benefit of having them in the classroom and then in the weight room and then in the classroom and then out on the field and then, you know, conducting yourself on road trips and the lessons that you can learn from the sport of football and from the people who coach the sport of football are voluminous.
It's amazing looking back, as I say, a junior high school coach myself and a high school assistant coach and a head high school coach. And what a young man learns, you know, someone that's 12, 13, 14 years old gets introduced, he understands that football is hard.
Well, Jack, you're absolutely right. Football is hard, and it's a tough game played by tough people. But I don't think we can say enough about the contributions of high school coaches to the development of our youth and to the development of the game. So certainly big supporters and advocates of them. That'll do it for this episode. We appreciate Trent Murphy coming on and your wisdom as always, Jack. And I want to thank True Car. Thank 4hymns.com. Definitely want to thank MeUndies. Hopefully we'll get them back eventually. I know it's an ongoing thing. And thank you to all of our listeners. We appreciate you guys each and every week. Looking forward to having some great guests coming on in the future. Owen Marisic, John Madden, and plenty of others. So until then, keep attacking each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Thank you for listening to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, here on Podcast One. Don't forget to subscribe at podcastone.com, the Podcast One app, or Apple Podcasts.